I'm Jess, XJM on Drupal.org, and this is the third episode of the Modules Unraveled podcast.
Welcome to the Modules Unraveled podcast, where the Drupal community speaks. And now your host, he loves to snowboard, Brian Lewis.
I do love to snowboard so much. I can't wait for DrupalCon Denver because not only will it be my first DrupalCon ever, I'm also hoping to get up a couple days early to go snowboarding before the conference. Anyways, today I have with me Jess, or XJM on Drupal.org. You might know Jess from Taxonomy Access Control, but today we're going to be talking about something she's been involved with since early August 2011, which is Drupal Core Office Hours. So welcome, Jess.
Hello.
Why don't you go ahead and start out by telling us a little bit about who you are and where you're from?
Well, I'm from Madison, Wisconsin, which is the capital of the state of Wisconsin in the U.S. And it's a really great town, although a bit covered in snow right now. It's a place I really love. Although sometimes you'll hear people from the region referring to things Madison as things like the People's Republic of Madison, in quotes. Gives you sort of an idea about our political leanings. Or another one you hear a lot is it's 77 square miles surrounded by reality. But honestly, I don't think I'd have it any other way. I really like it here in, you know, non-reality. And a fun fact is that I actually work at the hospital where I was born, purely by coincidence. I work for the Department of Family Medicine at the University of Wisconsin. And our administrative offices are actually adjoining that hospital. I also work as a volunteer at the University of Wisconsin-Madison Arboretum. And again, purely by coincidence, the UW-Arb happens to be like right next to that same hospital. So I've lived in Madison my whole life, and it's a place I'm really connected to.
Cool. So how did you get started with Drupal then?
Oh boy. Okay. So in some ways, this story is kind of hard for me to tell now for a few reasons, but I think I figured out a way to sort of work around that. All right. So this is going to be sort of a long meander.
Okay.
I guess it starts back in 2003 when I collaborated with a few people to make what was essentially a content management system. We were taking this class, really cool university course that paired teams of students with nonprofit clients. And the idea was that these student teams were responsible to provide the clients with whatever communication services they needed. A lot of the clients were looking for websites, but a lot of that was like sites made in Dreamweaver or really, really basic templating in PHP and ASP, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And the course, I mean, it also included things like creating business plans and marketing strategies, whatever. I don't follow. I wasn't interested in that part of it because, you know, I was taking the class because I was like, oh, cool, I'll make a website for someone. But writing copy, design work, all that sort of stuff. So anyway, for our client, we decided that we were going to do one better and make a, quote, database-driven web application. But it was essentially a CMS. Mm-hmm. And then the following semester, we expanded that same project to make the website for the course itself. And then the following fall, I actually ended up teaching a web development section for that same course as a student instructor. So that was a really great experience. Yeah. But then in 2005, one of the people I'd taken the course with introduced me to the fact that there were all these open source content management systems, including Drupal, you can probably see where this is going, that had already done every single thing we did for the client. So that was, you know, that was a great thing. That was a learning experience. Mm-hmm. And at the time, my impression of Drupal was actually kind of negative. It must have been in Drupal 4.5 or 4.6 at the time. And I just remember that all the themes used transitional doc type definitions, and there were table layouts everywhere, which really grossed me out. So not a favorable impression.
Yep.
Of course, the hilarious part of that is that there were table layouts in Drupal until like 2 years ago. Mm. Last year even, actually, I guess, when Drupal 7 was released. But anyway, not a favorable impression. But I did overcome my reservations eventually. In 2006, I got hired by a campus department to make an intranet website. And I chose Drupal for that project just because the community seemed to be the most active. My goal was essentially to not do what I'd done for that stupid course. You know, instead of it being this application that three or four of us understood because we'd written it from the ground up, I wanted the client to actually have options for maintenance and support in the long term.
Yeah.
So that was Drupal 4.7. And then in 2007, I started at my current job at the University of Wisconsin-Madison Department of Family Medicine, like I said, and built a couple of Drupal 5 sites for them. And by that time, the Zen theme existed for Drupal 5, so that made me like Drupal a whole lot more. And let's see. So that was, it was actually a while after that that it sort of switched for me from being, you know, Drupal is a tool in my box to Drupal's the thing that I do. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think the first time I went to like a Drupal camp or anything like that was in 2009. And I think it was actually the beginning of 2010 before I was ever on IRC or went to like user group meetings or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So it took me kind of a long time to get into. And I was active like posting on the forums and in the issue queues and stuff from the beginning, but I didn't really engage with the community as a whole until much later. So yeah, it took sort of a long time for me to warm up to it.
Okay, cool. So now you're a full-blown module maintainer and everything.
Yeah, look at that. Sort of, or at least I pretend to be.
So I've been hearing a lot about core office hours online. Can you tell us a little bit about what those are and what they're for?
Oh, I would love to. So the purpose of the Drupal core office hours is essentially to help people work on the Drupal core issue queue. It's definitely intended to unramp new contributors to core, but it's also a good opportunity for experienced developers to spend maybe 30 minutes or half an hour, 30 minutes and half an hour, the same thing, 30 minutes or an hour a week, like working on the Drupal core queue generally. Mm-hmm. So they're held in the Drupal IRC channel, which if you've never used IRC before, it's actually a really great way to connect with the Drupal community in general. Mm-hmm. If you go to drupal.org/IRC, there's instructions there for how to set up a client, what channels are available, stuff like that.
Okay.
So it's held in the main Drupal IRC channel twice a week. There are two time slots. The first is 0400 UTC, the universal time on Tuesdays, which is actually Monday night if you're in North America. And then the second time slot is 1600 UTC Wednesdays. So for me in Wisconsin, that's 10 p.m. on Monday night and 10 a.m. on Wednesdays. And to sort of give background on why we do the office hours, I'd like to point out three things, okay? The first is who Drupal core developers are, because I think this is something that a lot of people who aren't really into it misunderstand. There is no Drupal core development team, in quotes. Mm-hmm. Everyone who contributes to core is a volunteer, and it's not a club. You don't get a membership card or anything like that. Core developers are just whoever decided to contribute patches for stuff in core. So in Drupal 7, there were like almost 1,000 people who contributed patches, actually really big, which is amazing.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, among that group of 1,000 people, it's actually a much smaller number who are active in the issue queue on a regular basis, working on, you know, more than just a handful of issues that affect them specifically. I think I've seen Webchick estimate that it's between maybe 20 and 50 people who are active that way. So that's the first thing to know. The second thing is that right now there are over 9,300 issues filed against Drupal core. And actually, I'm going to say that one more time. I'm going to look at my dashboard and refresh it here. Right now, there are 9,387 issues filed against Drupal core, open issues filed against Drupal core. So you can see, obviously, that with that many open issues, that group of, what, 20 to 50 volunteers is not going to be able to go through all of them. It's just not going to happen, right?
Yep.
On the other hand, though, I'd say a majority of those issues don't actually need the expertise of someone who's really deeply into core. A lot of them are support requests. A lot of them are duplicates of existing issues or even issues that have already been fixed. A lot of them are actually issues with contributed modules that just need to be triaged and moved to the appropriate modules queue. Mm-hmm. And even many of the rest are stuck on something that's relatively basic. So there's a lot that can be done that doesn't really need, you know, one of these, you know, super duper core developers to fix. The problem really is a shortage of reviewers. There's too much noise in the queue and then not enough people going through it. So that's the second thing. The third thing to keep in mind is that contributing to core can be kind of intimidating, at least for some people anyway. I don't think that it needs to be or that it should be, but it was for me personally. Like a year ago at DrupalCon Chicago, which is the first DrupalCon I went to, people suggested working on core stuff, and my reaction to that was kind of terror. Like, I was like, no, not me. I couldn't possibly do that. I don't know enough. And that's kind of hilarious and ironic to me now, because now there are so many different things that I would like to work on that I just don't have time. You know, like, I feel like a kitten trying to chase five different strings. My attention gets pulled in so many different directions, and I can't just focus. So anyway, that's why a lot of people do stay on the outside, and I did. I think there's a few reasons for that. One being what I just described, you know, this I'm not smart enough, I don't know Drupal well enough thing. Mm-hmm. I guess what I'd say to that is, so since I've been doing the office hours, and since I have all of these core commit mentions suddenly, I don't really know how that happened, but I do. Uh-huh. People seem to think that I'm some sort of like rock star programmer. And I will tell you right now, it is hilarious the degree to which that is not the case. I mean, I have no idea what is going on in so many issues. But the important thing is that that doesn't prevent me from contributing. Like, there are still parts that I understand. And so there are specific pieces and specific issues that I can help with. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. Another thing I think that can be challenging for getting involved with CORE is that there's a lot more structure to contributing to CORE than there is in just, you know, working on a contrib module. There's also kind of etiquette even or like expectations that people have. And some of it is documented in the Drupal.org handbook, like the mechanics of it. Mm-hmm. But I didn't look for or find that documentation. And even now, having read it, I think that I still would have been kind of toughing it out on my own, trying to figure out what people's expectations were. Additionally, the QA process for CORE can be kind of intense compared to contrib. Mm. For legitimate reasons, obviously. Right now, any change in Drupal 7 affects 250,000 websites, right? Yeah. And the quality of the CORE code base affects every Drupal developer, every Drupal project. But still, put yourself in the shoes of someone who's contributing for the first time. Say you find an issue and you say, hey, you know, I can fix this. So you spend a bunch of time working on it and post a patch for it. And then someone comes along, reads your patch quickly and says that this, and that, and all these little things are wrong with it. That can be kind of disappointing, especially if you're not expecting that kind of feedback, mm-hmm. or if you don't already know that most CORE issues probably take a number of iterations, a number of patch revisions to resolve. What's worse, though, actually, is the flip side, when you don't get a review at all. And this is because of what I was saying earlier about the, you know, the sheer number of issues in the queue versus the number of people reviewing. It could be that if that particular issue isn't on anyone's radar, it gets stuck at needs review and no one looks at it at all. And that's really discouraging. Mm-hmm. So the modest goal of the CORE office hours is to help solve all of those problems at once. Like by having a set time where people can work on contribution with an experienced developer, it helps break down some of those barriers to contribution. It makes it more accessible. It helps people know what to expect and gives them manageable tasks and, you know, a way to access and mentoring. And at the same time, the kinds of tasks that we do help clean up the CORE issue queue, reduce the noise, and also maybe unstick issues that are stuck on something. So together, in the long term, ideally, this is my vision. Mm-hmm. These things together mean that there are fewer issues pending and eventually, hopefully, more people with the kind of experience needed to review the more complicated patches, because everyone needs to start somewhere, right? Mm-hmm. And I guess I should probably explain how it works, too. I forgot this earlier.
Okay.
So what you do is you join the Drupal IRC channel during one of those time slots I mentioned, mm-hmm. 0400 UTC Tuesdays, 1600 UTC Wednesdays. You just log in the channel and say that you're interested in participating in office hours. I'll also usually have a channel topic set with some instructions in it, so you'll want to look for that in your client. And I'll help you find a task, guide you through what to do with it, and answer any questions you have about it. That's basically all there is to it. I also keep track of everyone who's participating so that I can follow up with them and also review the issues afterward just to make sure everything was handled correctly. So that's all there is to it. It's really simple. You just have to be there, show up, and I'll help you do something.
Great. So like people like me who aren't developers mm-hmm. can come in and basically you'll tell me where I can be of best use, and then I can go and do that and basically report back to you. Is that how it works?
That pretty much, more or less, yeah. And I try to keep an ongoing conversation with people. Although there have been a couple of days where it's a lot of people and I kind of have to like call in reinforcements. So I might like on you off on someone else to talk to. But for the most part, yeah, that's exactly what happens.
Cool.
And the first contribution can take, you know, sometimes a really simple thing can take a really long time the first time you do it. But the idea is that, well, at least a lot of people, after they do the office hours a few times, then they go off and do this sort of stuff on their own too, which is great.
Mm-hmm. So. Excellent. That sounds awesome. Okay, so like I said, I'm not a developer, uh-huh. and so I haven't paid much attention to CORE office hours in general. So tell me again, what kind of people can get involved, and then what can we do?
So for you, anyone can get involved. Well, you know, anyone who's familiar with Drupal, right? Uh-huh. And for a non-developer, there's actually a lot of things you can do, okay?
Okay, like what?
I have a list of 5 things here. So the first thing, the big thing that you can do, even if you're not a developer, is getting steps to reproduce an issue. If you can install Drupal and use it, this is something you can help with. That's all there is to it.
Okay.
There's so many issues that get filed that say, you know, I have this horrible error message when I do this, but it's not clear how their site got to that point. Mm-hmm. So what you can do is, you know, have a conversation with that person and write out clear steps to reproduce the problem, like 1, 2, 3, click on this, type this, do that, that mm-hmm. makes the bug happen. And it's so important for so many reasons because, first of all, it helps developers reproduce the problem so they can actually debug it, which is actually, you'd be surprised how hard that is sometimes to just figure out what the problem is. It also avoids confusion by making sure that everyone's doing the same thing, kind of. And this is the cool part. It's like a perfect recipe for a developer to write a functional test to test the bug. We have a policy in CORE that every bug fix needs to be accompanied by an automated test that we commit with it.
Okay.
So the idea is that the test fails when the bug is there and it passes once the fix is applied. And what that does is that makes sure we never, ever break that thing again. Hmm. And this is part of why Drupal 7 is awesome, because it's seriously, it's the most stable release of Drupal ever by far, because right now Drupal 7 has, I think, like 30,000 automated test assertions. Hmm. And Drupal 6 doesn't even compare. Like, I think it was, I mean, the automated tested system wasn't available in the beginning of Drupal 6, so it has like 100 or 200 or something like that. It just doesn't compare at all.
Wow.
So Drupal 7 is awesome. Use Drupal 7. there's something I should have pointed out or that I don't point out is your steps to reproduce should actually start from install Drupal core every single time.
Uh-huh.
That may seem kind of, you know, it might be kind of seem kind of tedious, but it's actually very important to start from the beginning and make sure that we're not making assumptions about what state the person's site is in. So that's the first thing.
Okay.
And the second thing is that steps to reproduce should also, ideally they should only involve Drupal core. It happens a lot that people have a problem with Drupal, so they file the issue against core without really saying, you know, do I have a contributed module that is causing this problem?
Mm-hmm.
So if an issue has, in those steps to reproduce that you just wrote, right, if the issue has install contributed module X as one of those steps,
mm-hmm.
please move that issue to that contributed modules queue.
Okay.
Often it'll turn out that it's something that needs to be fixed in that module. Now, sometimes there is an actual core bug, but a core issue can get opened for that, you know, like when the details of it are ironed out. And the contrib modules maintainer is going to want to know about it anyway. I know that I would personally.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if my module is causing a bug that people think is involved with core, please do tell me, because otherwise I'm never going to know to fix it.
Right.
Well, I might, but most most contributed module people probably wouldn't necessarily stumble on the issue. A third thing that you can do that doesn't require being a developer at all is looking for duplicates of issues. It's actually a good thing to do anytime you look at any issues, just to check and see if there are other issues that have the same problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because it can point, you know, you'll want to point the person to, like, if there's already work being done to fix that problem, awesome, that person's going to want to know that, and they can actually then help on that issue, even if it's just, you know, helping test a patch and saying, hey, yes, this solves the problem for me, awesome, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It can also be sometimes that the issue is actually already fixed and the person just needs to either upgrade core to the latest stable release, or maybe in some cases apply a patch and just wait for the next stable point release to come out. Like, there's this huge nasty issue with active menu trails that everyone has a problem with, and the fix for it will be available in the next release of Drupal. So there's hundreds of people who, like, they just need to apply that patch and wait for the next release of Drupal to come out. And so if you can find those issues and tell people that helps a lot.
Okay.
That's number three. The fourth thing that you can do is to answer support requests. We don't really handle support requests in Drupal core in the queue, and there's currently a discussion going on about where to direct people for that. But mm-hmm. in the meanwhile, you can help answer those issues that do get filed. You know, if you know how to fix the problem, you can just tell them, because, you know, anyone who uses Drupal might be able to answer this question. It doesn't have to be some technical, complicated thing.
Right.
And in general, also, you can refer the poster to the Drupal.org forums, to Drupal's Stack Exchange site, which is cool and worth checking out if you haven't, or, you know, even to existing documentation about whatever they're trying to figure out for future support. And then finally, my favorite thing that you can do as a non-developer is to write issue summaries for issues. This past summer, Drupal.org added the functionalities where you can edit the original post of an issue, sort of like a wiki.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a standard template for what you put in there with instructions for it. Mm. So you click the Edit tab, and the issue summary instructions are linked in this blue info box at the top of the form.
Okay.
And the summaries, they are so useful for, like, clarifying the status of an issue. It makes it so much easier to review an issue. So think about it this way. Like, if it takes 15 minutes to read through all the comments on an issue, uh-huh. and there are 20 people active on it, if you do the multiplication, that's, like, I think 5 hours of our collective time spent just reading the issue. You're, like, not even, like, solving the problem, mm-hmm. just reading through everyone's comments. So if one person takes 30 minutes and writes a concise summary of everything that's happened in the issue so far, that one person just saved the whole group 4.5 hours. So that's a really, really useful thing to do, and I would definitely encourage anyone and everyone who ever looks at an issue, if it doesn't have a good summary, or even if it has a summary but the summary's not up to date, just, you know, edit that, add the information you can, help make it shorter and clearer, whatever. It's very useful.
Okay.
So 5 things. And actually, there's also a number of things you can do. They require, like, a little bit of technical knowledge, but you don't actually have to be a programmer for it. Like, the main thing is, if you can install and use Git and learn how to use patches, you can do a bunch of stuff. You can test patches, first of all, which is very important for getting issues fixed. You can apply the patch, you know, go through those same steps to reproduce that we talked about earlier and say, hey, this does actually fix the bug. And you can even provide screenshots of what happens after the patch is applied. And that part of it is actually, like, if it's like a front-end problem or user interface change, that part's really helpful for people reviewing the issue. Hmm. And if you're a little bit braver, you can even help improve the code documentation for patches. Non-developers might be surprised to learn that a good chunk of Drupal core is, well, most projects probably in general, but a good chunk of Drupal core is in English. Like, you can read it like it's English words. And we have standards for how that inline documentation in the code base should be written. So if you're, like, maybe somewhere in the middle between, you know, I code and looking at code makes me run away screaming, like, if you're not quite to that other extreme of it, you can help polish the documentation for the patch, submit a new patch, and get that part fixed, which is also very helpful if you've got a developer who doesn't have English as their first language. It's really helpful if you are a native speaker to just sort of make their comments read like English.
Yeah, so that's good. Yeah, that's a really good point.
And actually, that's also a great way to get involved if you do want to get involved as a developer in core, but you're not sure where to start, or you're just getting started. It's a good way to kind of get familiar with the patching process without actually having to figure out how to fix a bug or something.
Mm, yeah. So that, wow, insights everywhere. This is great.
If you are interested in working on documentation issues, the office hours is one way to get involved. But another thing you can do is just check out the documentation component. Like, if you go to the Drupal core issue queue, you can search, you know, select search by, advanced search, issues that have this component. And if you select documentation there, you'll get a list of all issues that need documentation fixes. So that's things that are in the API documentation. If you change them, you're not going to break Drupal. The most you're going to do is, you know, offend someone with bad grammar. And Jennifer Hodgden is the API documentation coordinator, and I know that she's always looking for more people to get involved with that. So that's cool. And actually, another thing for people who do want to get started in development is to look for the novice issues. In the contributor links dashboard block, I forget what it's called exactly, but there's a link there for novice issues. And those are specific issues that people who are just getting started, like the simple tasks to fix that we think hopefully someone can, maybe people fix their first patch.
Mm-hmm.
So we work on those in office hours sometimes, but even if you can't make the office hours or you don't want to do it that way, you can still just look at those issues and find one, assign it to yourself and say, hey, you know, I'm going to try fixing this. So that's another thing.
Okay, Jess, well, thanks for clearing that up. Sounds really good, and I'm definitely going to start showing up for those.
Yay!
Now that I know that I can get involved. Now that I know I'm not going to be shunned from that group.
I don't shun.
All right, well, let's go ahead and wrap up this podcast. And there are two things I always ask my guests. And the first is, what are you most excited about that's up and coming that you are not necessarily involved with yourself?
I think I'm going to have to go with a shout out for the Configuration Management Initiative, CMI.
Hmm.
This is a core initiative led by Greg Dunlap, who's HeyRocker on Drupal.org. And there's also a lot of other super smart people who are working on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really, really cool new thing that's going to be in Drupal 8. Pause, big red text box caveat. Drupal 8 is not going to be out until at least 2013, maybe later.
Okay.
So use Drupal 7 now, please. End caveat. So what this solves is there's this perennial problem in Drupal where, you know, you've got your sandbox site and you click together, you make some content types, you make some views, you configure a bunch of module stuff, and hey, it works great. And then it's all of a sudden it's like, oh wait, so how do I get all this stuff onto my live website?
Mm-hmm.
And in the past, there have been two options. The first option is just to click through and rebuild every single thing on that production site.
Mm-hmm.
Or the second option is to use something like features, the features module, which can be kind of, it can be way complicated for most use cases, in my opinion. So the goal of CMI is to instead put those configurations that you just click through and set up in files that you can just copy to your production web server. And it supports that natively in core.
Hmm.
So this is something that I know that will save me a lot of headaches in maintaining my department's website. And I think it's going to be a big win for using Drupal in general, because it's one of, like, the most frustrating things for people.
Yes.
So go CMI. It's awesome.
Excellent. That does sound good. And finally, where can people find out more about you and your projects?
Well, my Drupal.org profile is probably a good start.
Okay.
I also have a blog, which is linked from my profile. It's on the Drupal Gardens website, and it's syndicated on Drupal Planet. It's just xjm.drupalgardens.com. Drupal Gardens, by the way, also, if you haven't checked out, pretty cool. You can just create a free account and build a Drupal 7 website. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then let's see, if you want to get updates about the Drupal Core office hours, I'd recommend following the @DrupalCore Twitter account. I'd send out tweets from that once a week, usually reminding people that the office hours are happening and also talking about if we're going to be focusing on like a specific kind of task. I'll mention that too.
Okay.
It's also a great way to get updates about like core development in general if you're interested in that. Like, you'll hear about the configuration and management initiative from the Twitter account. So it's cool.
Great. Okay, Jess. Well, thanks for coming on. And I'll be seeing you in the core office hours. And and I'll just see you then.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Well, that was my interview with Jess. If you want more information about core office hours, visit modulesunraveled.com/podcast/003. This is the third episode. And I'll have links to all kinds of information on how you can get started in IRC and get involved with core office hours. Till next time, we'll see you later. We'll be right back.